with Halloween around the corner, literally, we are diving into something positively ghastly. It's the Ghastly Dreadfuls, the Center for Puppetry Arts' annual mature Halloween show featuring a wide array of puppetry styles, music, and vaudeville-like acting. The show went on a hiatus in 2012, but came back to life last year. In total, this is the 10th installment of the play. John Ludwig and Jason Hines conceived the idea. They are also Simply Dreadful and Catly Dreadful, and they're here in studio to tell us about the rest of the Dreadfuls. Welcome to you both.
Oh, it's a delight.
I have not dreaded this moment at all. We see plenty of horror films nowadays, but horror theater seems to be a lost art. Is that something that the Ghastly Dreadfuls is looking to fill the void?
Definitely. Yeah, we definitely wanted to make many different many levels of horror. We have some that are like straight out scary. Others are a little more spiritual. There's kind of a mystical, supernatural. And some are just funny.
Yeah, some are just outright silly. So,
yeah.
Tell us more about that. I love outright silly. If I'm going to be scared, I'd like to be scared silly.
We read a lot of ghost stories, Jason and I. We just read hundreds and hundreds. Yeah.
Probably most of them at this point.
Yeah. Yes, all of the ghost stories in the world. But we find a variety. Like, one, is it visual? Can you visualize it? Because puppetry is a very visual art form, and it's not really about talking as it is the action, the design. Like we're doing this year, we're bringing back The Canterville Ghost by Oscar Wilde. It's a great ghost story, but it's not your traditional scary ghost story. In fact, they torment the poor ghost, the Americans who move into this castle.
That sounds vintage Oscar Wilde. Have to be.
I think it was one of his first published pieces.
Yeah, wow. I think it was.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to have some humor amidst the horror. Who exactly are the Ghastly Dreadfuls? I know, John, you are Simply Dreadful, and Jason, you are Catly Dreadful.
Yes.
Tell us more about the other Dreadfuls.
Well, we have Disley Dreadful.
Scott DePoy.
Scott DePoy and Daphne Dreadful. Kristen Haverty.
Spencer.
Spencer's Darkly Dreadful. And
Robert Strickland.
Is Shockingly Dreadful.
Oh, I like that. Flourish there with Shockingly.
And then there's Ray. There's Ray
Kaplan. She's Lady Dreadful.
And what's the shtick for each of them?
That was what everybody had to come up with on their own. We said, okay, you're in the group, but you have to figure out who you are. The only person we told that it had to be something was Jason. We said, no, you're not going to be a dead gunslinger. You're going to be a cat.
So I've been an undead cat for all this time.
But don't they have 9 lives?
Well, he's gone through all of them.
Okay, and this is your 10th installment. The 10th time the Center for Puppetry Arts will perform the Ghastly Dreadfuls. John and Jason, you wrote the original iteration. How has the show evolved since you created it?
Wow.
Well, one of the fun things about the show is, since they are short pieces, we get to add new pieces and take some away and give them a rest. And we've been doing that for the past 10 years. So we have a huge collection of pieces that that we're not even really actively doing now, and because we're always adding new ones.
And there are fan favorites, too. Yeah. Like, there's certain ones. The Girl in the New Dress, people really love that one. The 1159, these are other, it's a ghost train story.
A ghost training
ghost train.
Story?
Ghost train, it's a train.
Oh,
like ghost
train. Okay.
Yeah, training. Well, that would be a good subject, too. We could do a ghost training. That was kind of the how to be a ghost.
The inexperienced ghost, that kind of was.
Oh, yeah.
We did that one.
And I thought 1159, the ghost is waiting for midnight to finally debut.
Right.
Next year.
Yeah.
The 11th.
Yeah, we'll go there with that one.
Well, one of the new features this year is a piece you have called The Horrific Experiment, a Grand Guignol.
Yeah.
And the Grand Guignol was a theater in Paris, the Pigalle section of Paris, which is pretty scary itself.
Yeah.
What was unique to this theater and its resulting style?
Well, Grand Guignol was a horror theater. They did really horrific stories, and it was a lot of psychological drama, but they also did a lot of visual. If you think of like early horror movies, it kind of evolved out of the Grand Guignol in that style.
So. Yeah, all the mad scientists and all, you know, just gore, and it's very lurid. Usually the stories had a lot of, you know, sexuality to them. Always something horrible happens in the end, blood, guts, it's, you know, people fainting. We've not had anybody faint yet.
Just what you associate with the Center for Puppetry.
Yeah, exactly, with the kids.
But this is not for kids.
No, this is not.
No. This one's not.
And it's definitely for adults.
To the enormous credit of the Center for Puppetry Arts, and part of your vision is adult entertainment as well. Mm-hmm. And I think that puppetry goes back so far, I mean, to ancient times. Mm-hmm. It's remarkable there isn't more puppet theater for adults in the U.S. I mean, you all at the center pretty much have the lock on it, don't you think?
Well, it would be nice. We do it at least in the Atlanta area, but there is a lot of adult puppetry in the United States that's kind of under the radar and over the radar. War Horse, which is interesting, should segue. Right. War Horse, we're getting a Top Thorn, one of the actual puppets for our new museum, and it's for the first year anniversary. It's November 12th. They're having a celebration to present Top Thorn, which Cheryl Henson bid at auction in London and donated it to the center. They've been so generous, so incredibly generous. And so we're going to have an unveiling. They're going to have a movie, The Making of War Horse, and they'll have Tom Lee, who's one of the puppeteers who worked the puppets, doing a talk back.
Do you think there is any sort of connection between now more legitimacy for the graphic novel and more adult appreciation for puppetry or puppetry for adults?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's definitely been an influence on me. I've always loved reading comics and graphic novels, and it's really a lot of times when we're planning and designing a piece, we'll, instead of writing a script like a traditional play, we'll do it all in pictures and storyboards, and it's very closely related.
Yeah, and Jason does all the designs, basically. All the puppets, everything.
Well, you know, this versatility is also remarkable because we live in a time of such specialties, but you all have to have a variety of talents. What are some of the multiple roles you perform?
That's the fun part of puppetry, is you get to do everything. You can write it, you can direct it, you can build it, you can design it, work with others who also, give their input.
Yeah, we also do music, and it's really difficult to know how to build puppets if you don't perform them. So I think it's really, really key to being able to be a performer and designer.
And in this show, it really helps because we have multi-talented people. They can dance, sing, act, play music, whatever they're required to do. Come back and pull the curtain if they need to. Yeah. There's no egos in the Ghastly Dreadful.
No.
Oh, well, we're talking with John Ludwig and Jason Hines, and we're going to hear a little of the music from the Ghastly Dreadfuls as we take a short break. This is City Lights from WABE Atlanta. You're listening to City Lights and the Ghastly Dreadfuls reimagining of the Danse Macabre. We were listening to that music, skeletons dancing in the moonlight, and Jason Hynes was just saying, you can't listen to the original Saint-Saëns now. It doesn't seem right.
Well, yeah, because we rearranged it so that it fit our puppet piece. So whenever I hear the original, I'm like, oh, this is when the skeleton enters. Oh, wait, no, death enters now. It's just...
Well, it has a real vaudeville feel to it, that arrangement as well. So this show has become a cult classic. Mm. And does that mean the play has certain obligations, or do you feel certain obligations to the audience because of it?
I think there are things that the audience want to see, and we want to bring back the favorites. And also, there's just the integrity. It's intimate, and we're in an intimate space. We haven't put it on the main stage. I don't think it even would fit up there because it's too tall. And there's no fourth wall. We're constantly talking to the audience. So there's a real bond. And for people who've come back, they come back year after year. It's like they come up to me and they just go, you're going to bring it back, aren't you? You've got to bring it back. You know, it's our anniversary celebration. We can't, you know. So it's really great having to build up a fan base.
That's wonderful.
And it's also fun bringing back some of the older pieces that people haven't seen in years. And people are usually excited to see something.
So you have a little bit of Rocky Horror Show and Little Shop of Horrors all built in. This morning I heard on Morning Edition there was a report from Cleveland about the excitement over the World Series.
Yeah.
And they were saying that a screening of Major League and I took place last night all over town. And I guess Clevelanders know that movie by heart.
Sure.
Do you ever have people reciting words from the Ghastly Dreadfuls with you?
I don't hear words so much, but I do hear like applause whenever we announce a piece that's coming up that people recognize.
Yeah, if they like it, they usually applaud. You know, the regulars, they applaud it. But yeah, if you look out at the audience, a lot of times I see them kind of nodding or clapping, or they look like they know it. They know what we're doing and kind of enjoying it. And that's really great.
Before the break, we were talking about the horror theater tradition and the Parisian Grand Guignol and its bloody appeal. Puppetry and horror really seem very well suited. Are there any dismembered puppets in the show?
New piece, horrific experiment. It's based on a script from 1902 from the actual Grand Guignol, and it's
basically the experiment is he's trying to reanimate his daughter who's passed away.
Aww.
Recently,
like within the past few hours.
It's basically a vivisection. She's not vivisection, but she's being cut open, and they're trying to. It's basically like heart surgery.
Heart surgery, basically. He's trying to like defibrillate her in a very, very primitive way.
Yeah.
Oh, what is this puppet made of?
Oh, all kinds of things. It's fiberglass and silicone and latex and. A lot went into building this puppet. It's very complicated.
They had Chris Brown, who did a lot of the design for it, who's a well-known in town as a...
Master of gore.
Master of gore, yeah. Yeah. This thing is really very graphic. Jason did we do it with masks, and the puppet is life-size, the daughter. You only see her from, like, the waist up. And so it's... I think it gives it a distance.
Yeah.
Because you can, like you said, with the puppets, you can really do horrific things to them because they're not alive. We know they're not alive. So if it's a person being cut open like that, you would probably be illegal.
Right. Well, yeah. it's graphic, but it is also very stylized at the same time. So it's not, you know.
So there's a lot of blood, but it's...
It's puppet blood.
Puppet blood.
Yeah. You don't have people fainting from that.
We haven't. We've had only one incident of somebody had to leave.
Right.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. They couldn't take it.
It just got to them.
My goodness. I guess that's a feather in your proverbial caps.
Most people just cheer. They're like, oh, yeah.
It's slapstick, really, too.
Well, our producer and, as we call her around here, senior puppet correspondent, mm-hmm. Gabby Watts, asked you this once before, but I was wondering for you as writers, what's the difference between making shows for kids and shows for adults beyond the explicit content, of right. course?
I'm actually more surprised at how similar it is than how different it is. Yeah, because our method of adapting stories for puppetry, it's pretty much the same. I mean, of course, there's different content, and children don't have like the attention span to do longer pieces that adults do, but it's more similar than different.
Mm-hmm. I'd have to agree with that, that the process is pretty much the same. And we do have stuff for kids. We have, right now through November 6th, The Headless Horseman of Silly
yeah.
Hollow.
Wanted to ask you about year's Halloween.
So it's a
kids.
Family show, and it's very funny. It's based on the Washington Irving story, but it's just ridiculous.
This is by the Frogtown Mountain Puppeteers.
They approach it. They say what's funny to them, that's what's in the show. So they, even though they're doing kids shows, they're approaching it as adults. They're saying, what do I think is funny, rather than trying to guess what a 9-year-old thinks is funny. They bring a lot of they connect. It's like the kids get it, because it's, even though they're doing 80s musical dancing.
It's really very
funny. I never got Punch and Judy.
Oh.
I mean, it scared me.
Yeah. No, Punch is very violent.
Yeah. Why? I mean, why did they allow it?
I think it was a release for people. Remember, it was street theater. It was for the common people walking, it's the attention span. You can walk away, so you have to have something knock about. It's also, he's very anti-establishment. He bangs up everybody.
Everybody, yeah.
Okay. See, I didn't have you to guide me through it. Everyone needs John Ludwig to navigate puppet shows. There will be a sensory-friendly version of this, I understand. For listeners who aren't familiar with that programming, what happens during those performances?
Well, basically, we're very sensitive to having the family feel very comfortable at home. We do a lot of things, like we do stuff ahead of time so they know what the place looks like. They understand they can do dress, they can come by early if they want to. But mostly we make it very inviting. The lights don't go down all the way. You can have snacks. There's fiddle toys. There's no restrictions. If you need to get up and run around, that's what it's all about. The performers are made to be aware that there may be kind of different noises coming from the audiences, but don't assume that they're just expressing themselves.
Right.
So what we're doing is very welcoming to the families, to make it like you fit in, you belong here, you're with other, and it's not just people with, children with ASD. It's open to everybody, and it's very inviting. And we come out all before the show usually to say, hey, we're here, we're always going to be here, look, this is what we do, hi, and have a good time.
So this was a very deliberate demonstration of inclusiveness on the part of the Center for Puppetry Arts to welcome children and adults with Asperger's, autism.
Absolutely. It's like one out of 60-something kids have been diagnosed with this ASD. So it's there.
I imagine you may have had some very moving experiences after some of these performances. Can you tell us about that?
Usually the parents are just so happy that they're not singled out as, those parents with this kid, they can relax.
Yeah,
they feel welcomed, and they show it. They're just so happy to have had that experience, and because they want the kids to go to the theater, and we do too.
Yeah, and that's more than us changing anything in the show. It's basically just making it welcome to them that they can enjoy the show and be who they are.
And we'll tone down things, so the lights stay up. If there's a certain scene that seems maybe a little bit too raucous, we turn down the soundtrack as well, so it's not really loud.
Have you noticed, have any children who were hitherto disengaged or reluctant to engage, approached, asked to look at puppets closer or touch?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they mm-hmm. do.
This mm-hmm. must be very gratifying.
And the parents are very happy because the kids really seem to focus in on the show. They can focus.
Yeah, unlike some of the attention deficit adults you were talking about
a little earlier.
Well, I have to congratulate you not only on 10 years, 10 installments now of The Ghastly Dreadfuls, but for all that the Center for Puppetry Arts brings to Atlanta. It is truly internationally renowned, I mean, a world-class attraction. And I thank you both so very much.
Oh, thank you.
And a happy Halloween.
Oh, thank you.
Happy Halloween.
May your dreadfulness continue. John Ludwig and Jason Hines are the creators of The Ghastly Dreadfuls, now in its 10th year at the Center for Puppetry Arts. They have four more shows this Wednesday through Saturday at 8 p.m. at the Center for Puppetry Arts. Because of some of the wicked and ghastly content, the show is for ages 18 and up, but kids can enjoy the Halloween production, The Headless Horseman of Silly Hollow, that has multiple daily shows through November 6th. Visit us at wabe.org/citylights for more information.